So there's a number of issues members must focus on when we meet tomorrow at 9. Yep, so that is just for tomorrow. Honourable Karabana?
Yeah, Chair, when I've got scheduled that was the day for the DPCI, looking at rhinos and firearms.
No, that's next week.
So we've now shifted that to next.
No, that was already, maybe you've got an old program.
Maybe it's changed to the new one. I'll have a look. Thank you very much.
So members, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning is the firearms amnesty issue. And then after that, we will, at about 11, we will deal with SAPS in terms of their technology plan. Yes, Honourable Molobatsi.
Thanks, Chair. What is the reason for the unavailability of the National Commissioner for tomorrow's meeting?
No, I think in terms of the letter, he's got one or other prearranged meeting. But I mean, it's fine. I mean, we can continue with the issues. Yes.
Chair, I had printed up what was the latest one. Perhaps we could send out a new schedule if it's been changed again, I need to know. Thank you.
No, we'll arrange that. Thank you very much. Then, members, in terms of today's program, we've got 3 hours available until 1 o'clock. So we're going to use 1.5 hours for the secretariat, if need be. And then after that, iPad also 1.5 hours. So without further ado, we're going to go to the second quarterly reports. Mr. Rapia, you can go ahead. Let's ask the members to introduce themselves, and then you can introduce your delegation. Let's start, Honourable Molobatsi.
Dumelang bagaetsho, leina la ka ke nna AG Molobatsi, ke leloko la komiti e, mme ke a lo leboga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pindile Mola, a member of this portfolio. I thank you.
Pano kwa maluma pijali wa ni mambara wa hai komite. Ndoli ho.
Morning, it's Diane Kolobana, Chair from the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
Well, good morning. My name is Philip Mshango, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. Mr. Apia, you're welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. With me in the delegation is Mr. Tom from the Deputy Minister's Office, Mr. Mahote, who is our Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Mr. Nkonjwana, who is our Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Basson, who is responsible for strategic planning. And my name is Alvin Pumuzorape, Secretary for Police Service. We are here to table our second quarter report. This report covers the period July 2017 to September 2017, and it deals with the following areas: the environment in which we operated during this period, the organizational in the environment, and the service delivery environment. And we also do the breakdown of the expenditure during the second quarter of this period. Regarding the service delivery environment, when Minister came in, he launched the first 100 days program, and as part of the work that we have done, because it overlapped, it was from the first quarter and it overlapped to the second quarter, so some of the work on his 100 days program was done in this quarter. The process of the external audit by the AGSA was done during this period for the previous financial year, and we've already reported that the unqualified audit was obtained. We also, during this period, developed the implementation strategy to deal with the ACSA findings, which we presented last week to the Portfolio Committee. During this period, the Secretariat has filled 143 of its 150 vacant posts by the end of the quarter, resulting in a vacancy rate of 4.67% for the organization. And in terms of employment equity, out of the 143 employees currently employed at the Secretariat, 77 are females, while 66 are males, which translate into 53.8% 53.8% females and 46.2% males. I must indicate that we are still struggling in terms of the issue of the people with disabilities, and we are making an effort to make sure that we reach the 2% that is the target for the government. In terms of the overall performance, we achieved 16 of the 22 targets, which is 72% performance on the predetermined objectives. Mr. Velem Basson will take us through the program by program performance, and the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Nkonjwana, will take us through the finances. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pia. Mr. Basson, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. In terms of our performance indicators for the second quarter, the joint consultative IPED Secretariat Forum meeting took place, and the quarterly performance report against predetermined objectives was also done. That's in the sub-program 1.1. Sub-program 1.2, corporate services, the workplace skills plan was approved, and reduced vacancy rate to 10% of the total post establishment was 4.6, which was underperformance, and the reason given is overperformance, sorry. And one, the reason for overperformance, one of the AGSA findings was the lack of capacity in finance, and as a result, a number of posts were created in finance, which increased the vacancy rate considerably due to the to address the gap in finance, all vacant posts in the finance were prioritized and filled, which resulted in exceeding the set quarterly target from 15% to 4.67%. Also approved government
governance of ICT.
ICT. Yeah, was achieved. Subprogram 1.3, finance administration, the percentage of payments made to the creditors within 30 days. Instead of 93, there was 99.3% achievement. There was an additional capacity allocated to resolving disputed invoices and making regular follow-up with alignments to certify invoices. Percentage of internal audit recommendations implemented. The target was 80%, there was 75% achieved. The priority and major focus had been given to resolving the recent and the latest EXA findings for the period under review. Subprogram 1.3 continue. Percentage external audit recommendation implemented. Target was 80%, the achievement was 82%. And the reason for variance was extra findings were prioritized and much focus put in striving to improve the audit outcome of the department. According to the audit action plan, there was 4 out of 27 not resolved in the first quarter and 4 out of 17 not resolved in the second quarter, therefore the difference in percentage. Percentage expenditure in relation to the budget allocated, 50% target. The actual is 41.2%, and the reason for variance is the Secretariat recorded lower than planned spending, mainly due to the fact that the department is still expecting invoices for services rendered by CITA, as well as software licenses and other computer-related expenses. And for program administration, we had 9 targets, and out of that, 6 were achieved. Program 2, intersectoral coordination and strategic partnerships. Key achievements there were the anti-crime campaign on gender-based violence and protection of vulnerable groups was held with public servants, civil society, which included NGOs, faith-based organizations, traditional healers, traditional leaders, and higher education institutions and business to discuss the gaps in policing that lead to the abuse of women and children. Other achievements were stakeholder engagement in the El Dorado Park with focus on barriers to reporting gender-based violent cases. Capacity building sessions were held in 2 provinces with various provincial secretariats, JCPS, cluster departments and CPFs, and in Mbizo with the community of Henwell Park in the Western Cape to promote community safety. In terms of its performance indicators for the program, the number of MOUs signed with stakeholders in order to build safer communities. The target was 1. It was not achieved. A third signatory to the MOU, SEPs, are still processing the legal implications before signing. The number of undercrime campaigns conducted per year in this quarter was 1, and 1 was achieved. The number of CPF training programs approved by the Secretary for Police was also not achieved. Consultation on the training for trainers for CPFs with Wits University is still in progress and not concluded yet. And the number of Isimbizo public participation in the health with communities to promote community safety were achieved. The total number of provinces implementing community police forum guidelines was also achieved. The number of provincial capacity building sessions held on crime prevention. Out of the 3 targets, we only reached 2 because Limpopo cancelled the 1 session. And then lastly, under this program, the number of established CPFs, the target was 5, but we could not achieve any due to the lack of provincial government support to the implementation of community safety forum policy. Out of the 7 targets for the quarter, 3 was achieved. The sub-program policy development and research. Key achievements here was the key focus areas for implementation of the white paper on policing has been identified. An environmental scan was, a report is being compiled. A process to develop an implementation framework in order to support and complement the white paper on safety and security is currently underway. And a single police service joint task team held a special sitting in order to develop an action plan for the priority phases of implementation. In terms of its indicators, it had 1 indicator, number of policies and policing submitted to the Minister for Police, and that was achieved. Program 3.2, legislation. Key achievements there were the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill has been submitted to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, and they have certified it, that it is constitutional and that it can be further processed to Parliament. And the technical drafting of the Firearms Control Amendment Bill is complete. The bill has been submitted to the Office of the State Law Advisor for preliminary certification. An information note on key policy proposals was prepared and approved by the Minister to proceed for the approval from Cabinet for the publication for comments. The drafting team of the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Bill will be processing the bill for further consultations, and the bill was presented to the Development Committee, DEFCOM, on the 21st of September 2017. The drafting team of the IPED Amendment Bill has commenced drafting the amendments of certain provisions in compliance with the Constitutional Court judgment, as well as other necessary changes with a view to further strengthen the independence and optimal functioning of IPED. In terms of its indicators, it had 2, and the 2 were achieved. So for the whole program 3, the legislation and policy, they had 2 targets and both were achieved. In terms of the program 4, civilian oversight, monitoring and evaluation, the key achievements were a total of 24 national monitoring tool oversight visits were conducted at police stations, which culminated in a compilation of a police station oversight report. and the police station service delivery trend analysis, and the school safety protocol reports were compiled and approved. So in terms of its indicators, the number of station visits, oversight visits, was supposed to have a target of 6. It achieved more than that, in this case 24, and the exceeding of the target was due to the minister's 100-day programs that included more police station visits. The service delivery trend analysis report was also achieved, and the number of reports on police implementation of school safety protocol was also achieved. And the number of assessment, okay, that's the next quarter, sorry. Then the bottom, the number of evaluation reports on the DVA non-compliance, exploring causes and possible remedies approved by the secretary per year, the target was one, and one was achieved. In terms of its overall performance, for quarter two, the program four, surveillance oversight, monitoring and evaluation had four targets, and all four were achieved.
Thank you very much, Mr. Basson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Secretary, colleagues, and all other stakeholders available. I'll be presenting the expenditures at the end of the second quarter, that is at the end of September. In terms of the budget of the department has got a budget of 124.6 million, of which as at the end of September, as the department have already spent 51.3 million, which equates to 41.2%. I must indicate to say that as at the end of October, although it's a preliminary figure because we haven't yet closed, the department is standing at 51% expenditure, which is about 63.5 million. So which is an improvement of about, if you compare it against, which is an improvement of about 12 million. So in terms of the different programs, administration, as at the end of the third quarter, we have spent about 46%. And then intersectoral coordination and strategic partnership, we have spent about 38%. Legislation and policy development, we have spent about 37.3%. And civilian oversight and monitoring had spent at 35.2%. Again, just to update the colleagues on, in terms of as at the end of October, administration has spent about 56% of its budget, and civilian intersectoral coordination and strategic partnership has spent 44.5%, while legislation and policy has spent 49% of their budget, and civilian oversight and monitoring, they have spent 48% of their budget. Next slide. In terms of the economic classification, as the department, we had a budget of 88.5 million for compensation of employees, of which we have spent about 40 million of that, which is an equivalent of 45%. Goods and services, we had a budget of about 33.5%, of which we had spent 32.4 as at the end of September. But again, maybe I just need to indicate to the House the progress that has been done so far. In terms of compensation of employees, as the department, as at the end of October, we have spent 53.1% on compensation of employees, and on goods and services, we have spent about 45%. When it comes to transfers and subsidies, as a department, we have spent about 4.9% of the allocation that is there. And payments for capital assets, we have spent about 28% of the available budget. So this is just a narrative of what I've just said, but what it indicates is that as a department, the drawings that we had already received from Treasury, it was about 48%. So if you compare the 48% against the 41, then you are out by 6%. And this equates to about 8.7 million that we have maybe spent below the cash drawings. And as has been indicated, most of this relates to CETA invoices, which as a department we haven't received, but also what has escalated the spending at the end of October is the fact that we've received some of these invoices from CETA, but the one that is still outstanding is the one for software licenses. So we're still expecting to get that. But also, the low expenditure was in relation to performance and notch increment for the staff that had not been paid by that period. A further contributing factor to this low expenditure at the end of September is because that although we have appointed, although 29 posts had been filled since April, most of these posts were filled late in the quarter, and 7 posts still remain vacant. So therefore, the low spending. There is also a direct link between the number of posts that are there against the spending on goods and services, because some of this money is used for the staff working. However, I need to mention that the department has shown through the past few financial years that most of our expenditure actually happens between August and November and January and February. And also, that is the period when we are expecting the departmental expenditure to really maybe increase, significantly increase. But as a department, we've also revitalized the budget committee, which is actually responsible for the analysis of the spending trends of the department. Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Mr. Rupia, is that the report?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you very much. Members, we will go to 3 questions each. I'll start and then we will go in the order from Honorable Mulabatsi. Yes, Secretary, I just maybe want to ask a question or two on those institutions that you have. I have a kind of brief, let's say a watching brief. The DNA board, the DPCI judge, maybe not the firearms appeal board at this stage, but I just want to know in terms of your internal planning, because we've detected some capacity issues with relation to the DPCI judge office as well as that of the DNA board. How do you foresee going forward that those issues are going to be dealt with? Of course, there's new incumbents, and I mean, we know the historic situation, but can we just get an indication what role, proactive role, is the Secretary going to play to ensure that in terms of PVMA compliance, but also governance issues and compliance to Parliament, that they will come on board? Can we just get your view on that? Then the second question relates to forward planning in terms of the 3-year cycle of budgeting, but also the legislation that will be handled by the committee in the next few weeks on the Critical Infrastructure Council. Now, of course, we will, during that process, engage fully on that, but I just want to get a sense, because that's going to be another institution that will be more or less in your domain, where you will have a specific watching brief, or not only watching brief, it will be accommodated within your structure. Now, you know, underestimating the financial implications can be, again, be an issue for you in the next 3 or 4 years. So I just want to know, in the current budget discussions with Treasury, in terms of finalizing the Red Book for February and also the next 2 years of the cycle, are you looking specifically at this as well? Thank you. Honorable Mulabatsi.
Thanks, Chairperson. My first question, what will be the consequences for the provinces that fail to report on the implementation of CPF guidelines and policy? My second one, which other bills besides the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill has been submitted to the Minister for approval? My last one, the 850,000 that has been moved from the household account, what will it be used for? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mulabatsi. Honorable Mumula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. In slide 17, lack of provincial government support to implement the CSF policy, it was not achieved. You have, target was 5, but you didn't achieve it. Will you please indicate the number of CSFs currently established countrywide? My second question, will you please indicate whether
you are collaborating with ZSA to develop a reliable survey design, sampling and collection of methodology. My last question is on slide 14. Capacity building sessions were held in two provinces. Which were those two provinces? What about the other seven provinces? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mabula. Honourable Mabija.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 30, I see the 00 on CPF issues concerning the number of assessment reports on establishment and functionality of the CPF approved by Secretary for Police Service per year. And again on community safety forums, how many are currently established countrywide, say, more especially in Limpopo, where I come from? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Carla Barnard.
Thanks, Chair. You claim to spend the bulk of your budget in August and November and then January to February. That, of course, the January to February speaks of fiscal dumping, and I'm quite sure you know what the Treasury has to say about that. Are you blaming this all on the CETA? Should we be calling them in to explain why they're giving you these issues? There's also another issue about low expenditure on goods and services. Again, that speaks the references to the CETA and lack of invoicing. So certainly we could speak with the CETA, but what are you doing to address the problem? Then what measures have been put in place to mitigate against the accumulation of accruals, as pointed out by the Auditor General? We're doing three, yes. Yes, why have you not, it seems, dealt with and implemented the internal audit findings? It seems you focused 100% on the Auditor General and ignored the report of your internal audit, which I think is equally crucial. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Carla Barnard. Honourable Bailey.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. My first question stems from slide 16, where the achievements relates to the provincial capacity building sessions, and it indicated that Limpopo was the one province that caused the underperformance on the targets by cancelling the session. Now, the committee has heard previously that Limpopo is at least one of, if not the only, community safety departments that pays stipends to at least some, if not all, of their CPFs. And I'd just like to get some insights from whatever information you have available of, firstly, how they manage to do this, because most other provinces struggle and pretty much say it's impossible to do so. And have you, as the National Secretariat, conducted any analysis on this approach? excuse me. And what the rationale is given by that provincial secretariat for the stipends, given that, as things currently stand, CPF involvement is meant to be a voluntary one. My second question is on slide 17, also on the CSF issue, the establishment of the safety forums. And I mean, the zero achievements is very concerning, because the establishment of CSFs is a medium-term strategic framework performance indicator, and stems directly from the National Development Plan recommendation. The NDP's wording is for community safety centres But my understanding is that the Secretariat is using the concept of forums, at least as things are being phased in. So the statements of the reason as a lack of provincial government support to implement the CSAF policy is very worrying, because a key pillar of the reforms in the safety promotion environment is lagging behind. I'd just like to understand, in terms of the feedback you've been getting or your understanding, is it primarily a capacity issue in the provincial secretariat to roll that out? Is it a lack of understanding about what they're meant to do and what their role is? I understand it is quite complex because it cuts across the three spheres, there's multiple stakeholders, or is it simply a matter of insufficient will, at least on the part of some? So capacity, understanding, or will and drive, or some combination of those, because the CSFs are absolutely crucial if we're going to get that whole of society approach to safety promotion and the involvement of communities in building their own safety. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Mbele, Honourable Mhlongo.
Yes, thanks, Chair. Chairperson, I've got maybe one clarity here that I think is critical for me. when you go to slide 14, the question of capacity building sessions held in two provinces with the provincial secretariat. Now, I wonder, Chairperson, even only if a civilian secretariat is also contemplating the question of developing a kind of a legislative framework that is going to seek to amend even the constitution, because this question of provinces running amok with matters of policy, I am much more worried about the situation, for example, in KZN, Chairperson, whereby we will be told that the former or the current suspended provincial commissioner is because had a fallout with the premier. When I am told that the premier wanted that commissioner to go and arrest Senzo Mdunu without necessarily having any case, a valid case. Now, this abuse of police by provinces to achieve narrow political agendas, to me, is very, very, very concerning, that at the end of the day, we want police to be professional in their line of duty. But on the other hand, we put them in the hands of vultures to actually use them as cannon fodder to fight their own narrow political battles. I think the civilian secretariat will have to develop some kind of an intervention kind of policy, so that a police act will have to be followed to the latter by whoever within the police service. Otherwise, this thing is going to create us a serious problem in terms of ensuring effective oversight. But again, lastly, the question of these, this kind of, what can I call, federal outlook of provincial secretariats. Don't you think that maybe some kind of overarching policy needs to be developed in order to ensure that these provincial secretariats are brought under your command, so that you cannot have that kind of a fragmentation that we even saw when we visited Nongoma, when you will be told by provincial secretariats that they are working with the vigilante group of, I've forgotten the name of those people, who are operating even outside of the CPF, which is a statutory body. And at the end of the day, how are they going to control these people, even only if these people are breaking the law? Now, these are the questions that are glaring in the face of all of us, to say we cannot allow a situation whereby provinces simply operate in an autonomous way whilst actually then impacting on the national security of the country. I think these are the questions that will have to be addressed by the civilian secretary. Then maybe lastly, Chairperson,
is the question of whether the civilian secretariat is now gaining support from police in terms of implementation of policy and transformation programs that seek to intervene to the policing of the country. Because I believe that in our last meeting with you, you were indicating that there seems to be a resistance from the side of South African Police Service in terms of not cooperating with you. Are they now cooperating with you? Because as the minister has actually even abolished that particular structure, which I agreed, we agreed with him, that it had no role at all. Now it puts you as a civilian secretary right at the center of a driving seat to ensure that transformation of the South African police is effectively felt. Do they now cooperate with you in order to ensure that they take a lead from your kind of direction, or else they just still remain in the island as they were before then?
Thank you, Honourable Shlungu. Secretary, the last question from my side. In terms of the Secretariat Act, there's a long list of tasks that you have. The Fourth Parliament's Police Committee in the Western decided upon that. Now, one of it is the issue of the evaluation of the budget and finances of SAPS. Now, in terms of the maturity model, and I've asked this question previously, how far are you from that situation where you, in terms of as advisor to the executive authority, will be able to do that kind of performance evaluation of the SAPS, but also the budget evaluation to give the necessary advice to the executive authority? I just want to get a sense, percentage-wise, how close are you to that ideal that's set out in the legislation? Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see here on page 16 that Limpopo cancelled the session. So I'd like to know the reason why Limpopo cancelled its provincial capacity building sessions and crime prevention program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Secretary, over to you and your team. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I might have missed some of the question because some of the members, when they started, they were a bit fast for my writing. So if I miss any of the questions raised through you, Chair, we can just ask us to address it. Regarding the DNA board and the DPCI judge, which are institutions that are housed under the civilian secretariat, the proactive role that we are playing to make sure that we ensure compliance with the PFMA and all the governance issues. Firstly, with the DNA board, what was the major problem was that they didn't have an administrative capacity that was allocated to them full at higher level. They only had a PA. So with the discussion that we had with them, they now have a director who acts as the head of that the administration, who its work is solely to deal with that. The appointment of the person was done. It's not long time ago. It happened this financial year. So we are now in the process of agreeing in terms of what, how they are going to deal, especially issues about submission of the reports to the portfolio committee on time, and also to make sure that they have a proper APP. So those issues, the director who has been appointed now, is now putting systems in place to deal with that. needs for the DNA bond. With regards to the DPCI charge, there is already a system that they have put in place, which includes the annual reporting. But unfortunately, because of the passing of the previous judge, that actually regressed. Honorable members will recall that in the previous time they were concerned that the secretary was not there even when the presentation of the DPCI report was presented. We had a follow-up discussion with the then DPCI judge, and we agreed on how it's going to be done, which was followed, but we couldn't table that on time because we were waiting for the new judge to come in place. We are now engaging with the new DPCI judge in terms of the working together, because right now it's an orientation process. It comes from another state arm, and he's coming into the public service. We've had the first engagement in terms of how we're going to work. He also indicated in terms of the issues of capacity that he requires, which I briefed him on the agreement that we had previously, and said he needs to consider what has been put in, because this proposal in terms of the structure that they need, which we are incorporating in the structure that we are doing for the civilian secretariat, which distinctly puts the two institutions, DNA board, properly as a structure which is in there. And what we will have is that as part of this strategic planning session that we are going to have for the next year APP, we will have clear targets to say how are they going to report the relationship in terms of the reporting processes, so that we don't miss the deadlines that are there. So this discussion is ongoing. And regarding the issue of the forward planning, we raised the issue about the need that we will need additional funding when we presented our budget for next year, but we couldn't indicate the quantum of it. The process has started now to cost the structure, because it has already been finalized. We have done everything that is required to cost that. So it will mean that it will be presented in the next cycle of the budgeting cycle. This year we will miss it. And our plan is that whatever will be in the structure that is finally approved, the implementation will be on a phased approach. We can't have a big bang, because we don't see us getting resources immediately. But there are some functions currently that are coming to the civilian secretariat, which are currently residing with the South African Police Service. So we can put an argument to say, if this function is coming to this side, that the money must follow that function, and those are the issues that we have raised when we engaged in the MTech process.
Secretary, just a quick follow-up on that issue. I mean, the dilemma is, say, for instance, that the Infrastructure Act will be come into play, say, mid-year next year. I mean, is there contingency plans, I mean, between yourselves and SAPS, for instance? Otherwise, it's again the issue of unfunded mandate, or SAPS will continue with that role. So I think it's just important that we've got assurance from your side that that issue was raised, and there's agreement with SAPS on that as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Regarding that, in SAPS, there's already a structure that's dealing with the national key points. So there's people who focus on national key points, and there's funds that deals with that. In terms of our assessment on the legislation, there is no need for additional money on their side. From our side, the only amount that will be we will require to have will be to pay for the council when they attend meetings, which obviously when they start there will be more meetings, and we will make sure that that is factored in the budget. We don't believe that it's a huge amount that we won't be able to afford it. It doesn't need to be requested from National Treasury because those people are not full-time. Majority of the people will be coming from government departments, with I think is the number of about five that will be from external. So you pay them per meeting, and our calculation is that it's an amount that we can absorb within the budget. On the issue of the consequences for provinces not implementing CPF guidelines, we don't have any province that is not implementing the CPF guidelines. They are implementing the guidelines. It's not an issue for now. It hasn't been an issue because they work within the interim regulations that are there, and we are now busy now revisiting the. We are doing the policy on CPF, revising that. But I think now the decision that we have taken with the in consultation with the provincial HODs is that maybe instead of having a policy, we need to put. Do regulations, CPF regulations, instead of policy. So that's the route that we are going, and we have already started the process using the information that we have gathered in terms of the policy development. And we are also looking in terms of the funding model. There's nothing from the Limpopo side that have done which is outside the framework. But we are looking in terms of the funding model of the CPF should be defined in the regulations. Currently, because there is no such, it's very quiet. We will need to make sure that that is addressed in the regulation. And we've looked into different provinces how they are implementing that. regarding the
just a moment, Honourable Shlongu.
No, Chairperson, I'm sorry to interject, but you see, if you come to slide 15, if and only if provinces, Chairperson, actually then performing well in terms of establishment of the CPF. Now, what informs this question of number of CPF training programs approved by the Secretary for Police, which is one, because I think there seems to be a gap there. Does it mean that provinces have established CPFs, but they remain untrained? Only one countrywide is trained, and they. So I don't understand that thing.
Remember, Secretary, you can go ahead. Thank you, sir.
Maybe if I can just explain that. The training program that we are developing, and we are doing it in partnership with VETS and SACITA, is to have one training program for the whole country. Sandra, it's not like one training. It's a program that will be rolled out in the whole. Every CPF member, when they become CPF members, they have to go through that training, and that's the training that the training program that we are developing. We're supposed to have finished it in this quarter, but we're still finalizing the issues with VETS. It's a training program that we are developing so that all CPFs, they know their roles, and everyone has got the common knowledge. Because most of them, they come in and they are not properly trained, and some of them think that being a CPF member means that you are now a reservist in the police and you have to do what the police. So there's those issues that in the training program, and they will also give them the pocketbooks that they can refer to as part of their training. Regarding the number of CPFs,
sorry, Honorable Rapia, Honorable Mabija.
It's the same issue. Isn't it when they come in as CPF, they get that training that you are busy preparing the program thereof? So after that, can the stations do in-service training on their own?
Thank you.
The plan about the program is that we will have train-trainer program, which was going to be done at national level. And these trainers will now go and train at police station level throughout the country. That's the plan, so that when they come in, they're going to have that training. So if it happens that it's new CPF members that have come in a province, we'll look in terms of how many are they, and then we set up a training for them coming into one central point at a provincial level. If at a police station is a new CPF altogether, then the training will happen at a police station level or at an area level if there's a number of them there. Regarding the CSFs, before the local government elections in 2016, we had 137 CSFs established throughout the country. And in Mpumalanga, after the local government elections, the 17 were actually disbanded. They were not, they disappeared. And then we had three established CSFs in the Free State, which takes us to the total now, the balance which we have of 123 CSFs established. Limpopo is the only province that has got CSFs established in all their municipalities, including district, but I don't have the actual number. But they are the only province that have got CSFs established, well-functioning. There's also a question that has been raised in terms of why are this not being established? Is it lack of understanding? When at a local government, you have to go and you have a resolution of council to establish the community safety forum. So the lack of political will for the establishment of the CSFs, it's the major challenge. Some of them are indicating that it's an unfunded mandate. They don't have money to fund these institutions. And that's the challenge that is there. Regarding the capacity building,
yes. Limpopo is the only province that has established this in all their municipalities. And what is it that you are doing to encourage the other provinces to do that? Because Limpopo cannot be a shining star out of nine. We need to have at least something going on in other provinces, because these things, challenges, are all over the country. Although Limpopo is forward, it's very good, and thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Pia. You can go ahead. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The Limpopo model was shared with the heads of departments. And at that heads of departments meeting, the agreement was that
that model need to be rolled out in other provinces. But the issue is that the establishment is dependent on the MEC, who is responsible for safety and security in the province, and local government. That relationship and working together is very key. It's based on that, because in Limpopo, for instance, their IDPs would have safety as one of the performance areas that needs to be addressed, and it's based on that they make sure that the CSFs are established. So from where we sit at the civilian secretariat, at national level, we don't have control on the establishment of the CSFs. We can facilitate, share best practices, come out with the policy to clarify how this should be established, and interact with, because we had interaction with SALGA, with the COGTA, in terms of how we can deal with that. And the CSFs, the success of the white paper on safety and security, it's very much reliant on having the CSFs in place, because that's where the fight against crime should happen. Regarding the capacity building, which provinces? The Free State and the Northern Cape. Those were the two that we have done. We have now a program. I've sent letters to the other provinces with dates that we are available to come and train and do capacity building. Because the focus of the capacity building is actually to, we are popularizing the issue of the CSPS Act, the regulations. We are sharing with them the legislations that come at national level that they need to implement, and a number of JCPS policy decisions that is there that need their implementation and what is expected of them. The reason for the cancelling in Limpopo was that there was not sufficient people who were available to attend, and unfortunately that workshop was even cancelled at the last minute. All of a sudden, people had sent their apologies that they won't be able to make it, and we couldn't go there, and you have a workshop with only the civilian secretariat, because we wanted a group including other JCPS people in the province, not only the civilian secretariat. So they had to include other people from SAPS and other JCPS institutions that are in the province. So they had to cancel because it was only the civil, the provincial secretariat members who were available. But we are going to get a new date. It will happen this quarter. The issues regarding the finances, the CFO will deal with that. It's just an issue around slide 30. That it says 0-0 there. Where there is a dash, it means that we didn't have a target for the quarter, so there is no the issue about the number of assessment reports on the establishment and functionality of CSFs. There was no target for the second quarter, that's why we don't have a value in there. The regarding the implementation of the ADA, the Auditor General and the internal audit, the CFO will deal with that. Slide 14, I've dealt with that. Are we considering the legislative framework to bring in the provincial secretariat under the civilian secretariat? And we cannot claim to have the powers to amend the constitution. It's the parliament that deals with those issues. What we do is we work within the intergovernmental relationship framework. That's how we operate in promoting the intergovernmental relations, and we work within that legislation to ensure that there is collaboration between national and provincial. And our legislation is very clear on that in terms of how we must function with the provinces. We are having quarterly meetings with heads of departments to align what we do with the provinces. We have every 2 months we meet with provincial secretaries to align what they are doing with what we do. So in that fashion, we are actually implementing what the legislation demand of us. The bills that were submitted for approval by the minister is the Firearms Control Amendment Bill. It was approved that we can go to cabinet with it, and also the DNA bill, the one that deals with the issues of the book held samples that must be taken for those Schedule 8 offenders, which the transitional measures. The 2 year transitional period has passed, and now we need to amend that part to address it. And the minister has approved that this should be processed through to cabinet, and it has already been presented to the JCPS committee that deals with processing of the bills, the development committee. The support from the police in terms of are we getting support? What I must indicate regarding this is you need the executive authority to give you that power to do oversight over the police, which we are getting that support. And the profiling of the civilian secretariat much higher in terms of the work that SAPS does. In some cases, there is cooperation, in some cases not. What we have agreed to do is we want to advise minister that when SEPS does their strategic plan, one of the indicators should be the implementation of the civilian secretariat for police service recommendations. How many did they receive? How many did they implement? How is it impacting on service delivery? So it should be one of the indicators that should be in their APP. And in that way, I think we'll be able to make sure that there is proper cooperation and implementation of our recommendation. Regarding the evaluation of SAPSBA, I must indicate that our capacity on financial analysis in terms of the monitoring and evaluation has been found wanting. The minister, when he came, he requested that we do a budget analysis. We don't have the capacity to deal with that, but we did what we could analyze in terms of what is in the budget and in terms of the priorities of the minister. But it's an area that we realize that we don't have the full capacity. We have approached the Development Bank for assist because we know they used to have what they call financial analysts. They could assist us in terms of building the capacity. But with the structure that we are having, we'll have to have that skill in-house so that it can assist us because we cannot use our CFO capacity to deal with that. It has to reside within the M&E function. So I can't talk about percentages. For me, the capacity is not good enough. And we need to build the capacity on this issue of financial analysis, which we don't have. Thank you. I will ask the CFO to answer the other questions, and if Mr. Basson has got other issues that you want to address, he will also.
Thank you, Mr. Appiah. CFO, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members, colleagues, and all other stakeholders available. There was a question on the funds that were shifted to the transfers. I must indicate that as a department, we had a contingent liability reported in the previous financial year, and this amount relates to the travel agency Wings, the former travel agency, which is Wings. And I must also indicate that the state law advisors are involved in the whole processes. So we then had to transfer these funds in anticipation of the fact that that matter will be finalized this financial year, so that when they claim, then we can actually transfer the funds to them. So that is the reason why the money was shifted there. It's mainly for us to cover that expense if the claim against the state comes to the department. On issues relating to the expenditure that seems to have been planned to happen around August, November, and maybe February and January, I must indicate that as a department, we make every effort to plan our activities during the second and the third quarter. But for whatever unforeseen circumstances, because this is based on the trends that has happened in the past, for whatever unforeseen circumstances, we find that some of these activities, they are not able to take place during that period, and therefore they end up taking place in the fourth quarter. So then that is why then we also have seen that escalation of expenditure during that period. But it's not that it has been planned by that. It's just for unforeseen challenges that cause us ending up to have that expenditure in the fourth quarter. Yes, in relation to CETA invoices, it is true that the CETA invoices has somehow slowed the spending of the department. I can indicate from the fact that for the first 5 months of the financial year, as a department, we had spent about 400,000 in relation to CETA expenses. But we know that our contracts say that for the full financial year, we should be spending about 6 million for CETA services. And as a department, what we've then since done, we did follow up with CETA on these outstanding invoices to an extent that just for the month of October, I've said that for the first 5 months, we've only spent about 400,000. But just for the month of October, after making a follow-up with CETA, about 1.8 million was paid to CETA, so which really confirms the fact that, and CETA claimed to have given us those invoices, but we had never received. So that is the matter when it comes to these expenses relating to goods and services. So again, the issue of accumulative accruals prevention. As the department, in terms of the accruals, AFSA didn't report much on say that we are not doing well in terms of the accruals. But what I can indicate is that you'll realize that if you look at our financial statement, the prior year before that, we had accruals to the value of about 5.6 million. But then what happened is that in the previous financial year, that amount was halved to about 2.7 million. So we must say that as a department, the value of our accruals is surely decreasing. And what we've then introduced as a department is that on a monthly basis, we try to get to evaluate, to say to what extent have we actually, what accruals are there for the department, despite the fact that even on quarterly basis, through the interim financial statements, the accruals are reported. And every time when we do that, we do the analysis to say how far are the accruals in comparison to the previous financial year. But it must be indicated that the accruals cannot be, you know, with us using the cash basis accounting, the accruals is not something that can be avoided, because what accruals means is that the service would have been rendered to the department, but for whatever reason, the department would have not received the invoices related to that, and therefore that is what will then cause the department to incur some accruals. But we make sure that if we find that, even for, and we've realized that most of these accruals will mainly come from the travel agency, and now we've established a situation whereby we've got a weekly meeting with the travel agency to make sure that whatever service that they would have rendered to us, we do receive those invoices. So that is one way of us trying to manage the issue of the accruals. In terms of implementation of the internal audit findings against that of AXA, we must appreciate the fact that for the first quarter and also into the second quarter, maybe in all government departments, we're busy with AXA. And therefore, everything that AXA raised, it had to be resolved. So the focus on AXA findings was mainly on those bases. But what we've also found is that some of these findings that AXA has actually found, they were also repeated in the internal audit. And therefore, as we are resolving some of these AXA findings, to a certain extent, the internal audit findings were also addressed. Now that the auditing process has finished, so we are now putting focus on both the findings from internal audit and the external audit to make sure that they all get resolved. I think that would be it from me.
Thank you. Any other responses from Secretary? I think there was an issue around our collaboration with Stats SA. At this moment, we are not working with Stats SA, but in the previous years, they assisted us with the analysis of the report when we had challenges with the analysis. But we are going to do a census on DVA. In that, we will need the collaboration of Stats SA, because we have never done anything like that, wherein we will go to each and every police station. And when we do that, we will need the collaboration with them, and we'll bring them on board. Currently, we don't have that collaboration.
Is that all the responses?
Yes.
Right. The members, if there's any further
additions, we will honorable Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. These are fairly short and quick. The first is, if I may, just a bit of a correction to a statement I heard the Secretary made when he said that the power to basically get information or get cooperation from the SAPS was dependent on it being granted by the Minister. If I understood that correctly, that's not quite right to my mind, because the power of the Secretariat derives from Section 32 of the Civilian Secretariat Act, which compels cooperation from SAPS members with both the national and the provincial secretariats. I actually referenced this point in my declaration on the BRRR for this department last week, and I think that's the understanding we need to get clarified, in particular on the part of the SAPS, but also for the secretariats themselves to have the confidence to say, you know, our power is granted by statutes, and there's actually no leeway for SAPS to dither and to and to dodge and dive on their obligation. This comes from statutes. It might need to be clarified and operationalized by regulations, where if the SAPS has some disputes or some hesitation, there can be a mediation from the minister. But I really think this is part of the problem we have in the states around accountability, enforcement, and around consequence management, is that we allow these slips to happen when people's duty is clear. So I would just like to encourage the secretary and the colleagues in the departments not to be shy to use their power, because it is there and it's granted by statute, not dependent on the minister. Just three quick questions, Chair. Stemming from one input from the secretary when he mentioned that there are some functions that are envisaged to be transferred from the SAPs to the secretariats, and that hopefully that'll come with a transfer of the funds as well. The only one I can think of is, excuse me, in relation to research, because there was a bit of a dispute around who's leading or doing research and what kind, is what are the functions, if I can just get a bullet point rundown of what those functions are envisaged to be, so we can have some clarity on that, because I can't think of any others apart from research. Secondly, in relation to the budget committee, what is the meeting frequency of the budget committee as it does its monitoring and tracking of spending? I'm assuming monthly, that tends to be the standard, but just so we can know what that is. And then the third slightly bigger question, but it should be a simple answer. In terms of the advisory role of the secretariat, did the secretariat advise the minister, or did he seek advice from the secretariat before he made the decision to take on direct management of the Crime Intelligence Division? And we're still trying to understand exactly what that means, which at face value looks like ministerial overreach in terms of what should be a separation between the executive and operations. So was there an interaction between the minister and the secretariat around advice to be given to that? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Is that all the members? Nothing else. Yeah, maybe Secretary, just two issues from my side. I just want to get again an undertaking that the state of policing report, is that underway? The state of policing report that the committee has requested. And then I just want to again focus on the higher functions of the secretariat that they're supposed to play. I think in previous interactions you've indicated in terms of your limited staff structure, and in over the years you've become the, I wouldn't use the word, but maybe transit station for people from the department, from the various ministries and SAPs and so forth. So, and you've also indicated you need specialists in terms of dealing with budget analysis and the wider policing, let's say, evaluation functions. Is there any movement, or is the situation still the same? Is there attrition of those staff? Are you getting in, let's say, the necessary expertise to fulfill your role as envisioned in the Act, or is it still status quo and you gradually try to build your capacity? I just want to get a sense on that. Any other members? Honourable Tlongu, covered. Yes.
No, Chairperson, I think maybe if we can reserve it for future debate, because if, for example, my concern was more or less in the same vein as you are putting, that if and only if, for example, there was this committee which the minister disbanded, which I agree entirely with him, because it would be a duplication if you look at. But will the committee, will the current structure of a CSP have all the expertise that needs to be harnessed in order to actually run this very mammoth task of ensuring that we get the ball rolling in terms of implementing the transformation agenda of the South African police? Because to me this seems to be bigger than their current capacity in terms of the structure. Do they have it, or maybe they will just rely on sourcing expertise from somewhere without having an in-house capacity themselves. I really don't understand. How are you going to move out of that particular thing, Chairperson? But then lastly, Chairperson, you know, this question of leaving this thing of provinces being on their own or being the question of oversight being just a voluntary, because to me it seems to be an unregulated area, that it depends on provinces, whether then they cooperate and all that. Now, I was just thinking to say, if, for example, we had an IPED, that is a national structure, in provinces, then provinces will have to decide whether then they establish IPED on their own. You wouldn't be having an effective organ called IPED. Now, when it comes to the empowerment of the oversight of the people, people taking stock and ownership of their own safety, this area seems to be highly relaxed, and I don't really think that we will ever be able to actually overcome. I'm looking particularly in the area of KZN, because that problem of KZN, at times violence benefits those people who are in power at a particular point in time. And those people will do anything to actually ensure that they defeat the object of empowering the people who ought to be running a kind of an oversight that is actually supported by the CSP. I'm talking from experience of the past, which I can also see escalating even today under the democratic dispensation. If it is left unregulated, voluntary as it is, I don't really think that it will make any kind of a headway. That is why then I was actually saying that in your own view, we don't say that you have got capacity to amend the Constitution, but in your own view, can you actually make a recommendation to the committee so that the committee can engage Parliament? Because that is where then our task is, to recommend to the local that this federal outlook of a civilian secretariat in provinces is not actually helping the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. That's the questions. Secretary, over to you for the final responses. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chair. The question regarding Section 32, I think I take the point that has been raised. I don't have to argue on that. We use those powers. So I concede on that. Which other functions are going to be transferred? The office of the minister is now under the police. So in terms of his budget and everything, in the office of the minister, it's under the police. With a new structure, that function has to be under the civilian secretariat. So going to be the Department of Police. So the secretary becomes the head of that department. The secretary becomes the accounting officer, full accounting officer, including the office of the minister's staff. The other issue is on the transfer. Yeah.
Can I just get clarity, because sometimes this really is a matter of terminology, and I think it will answer a question that Honourable Caleb Barnard wanted to ask. So what is currently the sub-program ministry under the SAPS budget will transfer to become your sub-program, is that correct? Okay. Okay, I think that answers it, eh?
Yeah.
So it's a sub-program transfer between departments.
That, you know, I just immediately said, but hold on, when I heard accounting officer, I mean, obviously the National Police Commissioner is the accounting officer. So we're taking a chunk of that away from the police commissioner, which we may have at some stage in the future, and handing it over to the secretariat. Interesting move.
Yeah,
it's an important step forward because it strengthens civilian control, and that you don't have the accounting officer of the police also managing the minister's business. I mean, it's a better arrangement going forward. Secretary, you can go into the other responses. Thank you.
The other function, it's the subs, the transformation. I mean, right now we even have what we're looking into is the whole transformation of the police. There's a committee that Minister established that is looking into subs transformation. That is the role of the civilian secretariat. And it's one area that there's funds that have been allocated to deal with that. So those funds need to come to the civilian secretariat so that we fulfill that role of supporting the minister in the transformation of the South African Police Service. So those are the ones that I can raise, which we are looking into. The research have to be beefed up, because subs will still need research operation. You cannot take research completely from them. They still need research, but it must be operation-related research. And the issue that was raised in the previous meeting, that we need to do role clarity with subs, we are busy dealing with that. And it will actually assist to say what research should subs do and what the civilian secretariat research should focus on. And that will mean beefing up the capacity of our research function. But whether that will come with the money, it's another story, because they will end up saying, no, actually there was not even enough money. Whatever you are doing in operation will still go and do with that. So it might be an area that will have to go to National Treasury and negotiate for additional funding to capacitate the research function. Regarding the CI, I read in the papers that Minister has taken powers of CI. I haven't seen it officially. So it's newspaper reports that are there. So Minister has then asked my advice regarding that. And I take it that it's a question that the portfolio committee can refer to the minister, but there hasn't been any advice seek from the secretariat. But these are newspaper reports that I also read in the newspapers.
Now, just on that one, we will be calling CI next Wednesday at 11. Remember, they weren't present at the second quarterly, so we will call them, and then the members can raise those issues. Yes, you can go with me.
Yes, the state of policing report is underway. We are busy with that, collaborating with the provincial secretariats to finish that. The issue about the movement of some of the people who were transferred to the secretariat, it's still there. It hasn't changed. The status quo, it's still there. Will the CSP have all the expertise to do everything in-house? Budgetary constraints obviously will determine what we will have and what we don't have. And in some cases you find that there are some of the projects that we will say, does it need a full-time person? Or you can get a contract person to do something and then off they go. You might find that the number of legislations that we have now that needs to be processed is a lot. But will it be the same 5 years down the line once we have done all those priority legislations and you find that you've got people who are now not having much work to do? So we'll do that assessment and say some of the things we can insource, some of the things we will have in-house and make sure that we are fully capacitated. But we will prioritize in terms of what we need to have.
Follow up, Honourable Colonel Barnard.
Yeah, I wonder if the Secretariat can give me an indication. When we passed the second-hand goods bill, for example, years ago, 2 years later, I came across someone who'd been involved with the bill, and they said that the regulations hadn't even been written yet. So there we were working till midnight, night after night, to get it through Parliament. And the regulations took years, and frankly, I don't even know if it's in play. So do you, as the Secretariat, keep a close eye on when bills have left you and gone through the processes? Do you oversee the implementation of those bills? I sometimes feel we're just whistling, you know, and it's the implementation is simply not there.
Thank you very much. Thank you, members. We want to close this session. So, Secretary, if you can just wrap up the final responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Yes, we do keep an eye on the implementation of the bills. One of the issues that we do every year, there will be an evaluation in terms of subs implementation of the legislations that have been passed, and we produce the report regarding that. But I think the issue about regulations is an area that legislation needs to focus on going forward. We haven't been doing well in that in terms of the legislations that have been passed.
Perhaps it did happen, but as I recall in the bill, it said the regulations had to come to this committee to go through the regulations. I'm guessing they never did. Yeah, of course not.
Right, CFO, you've got also responses?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I think it's the one about the frequency of the Budget Committee. As we've revived it, the terms of reference are such that the committee must meet on quarterly basis, but we've looked at the improvement that we need as an organization, and therefore for the current financial, up to the end of the, and then we will review that, up to the end of the current financial year, the committee will be sitting on monthly basis, but although the terms are saying on quarterly basis, but we've decided that looking at the improvement that we need as CFPS, they will be meeting on monthly basis.
Is that all the responses? Right, thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you to the Secretary and his management for the second quarterly report. We have noted the responses, and of course we will ask the researchers to further look at it, and then we will communicate in due course. Thank you very much. Members, 10 minutes tea break, and then we will continue with iPad. Thank you.